picked a piece of Dot's chocolate. "We'll find you a love spell somehow," said Dot.
"Thanks, Dot," Sophie sobbed, mouth full.
"This is amazing."
"Rat droppings makes the best fudge," Sophie gagged.
"Who'd you call fat, by the way?" Dot asked. Things got worse. For a week-long challenge in henchman training and animal communication, students of both schools had to tote assigned creature sidekicks everywhere they went. At first, both schools exploded into chaos, with trolls tossing nevers out windows, stampeding satyrs stealing lunch baskets, baby dragons setting desks on fire, and animals christening the good halls with mountains of dung.
"It's a tradition, an attempt at school unity," Professor Dovey said to her Evers, clothespin on her nose. "However misguided and poorly organized."
Castor scowled at Nevers, flitting about the belfry, under siege by their henchmen.
"Once you get your heads out of your behinds, you'll realize who's master."
And indeed, after 3 days, Hester had her baby ogre potty trained and spitballing Evers at lunch. Tedros had his wolfhound swaggering behind him. Annadil's python befriended her rats. And Beatrix's fluffy white bunny inspired such love, she named it Teddy. Tedros kicked it every time he saw it. Even Agatha managed to teach her plucky ostrich how to steal candy without teachers noticing. Sophie, however, found herself with a chubby cupid named Grim. With bushy black hair, pug nose, pink wings, and eyes that changed colors depending on his moods. She knew his name was Grim because he wrote it all over Room 66 in her favorite lipstick the first day. On day two, he saw Agatha for the first time at lunch, and his eyes went from green to red. Then on day three, while Yuba taught uses of wells, he started shooting arrows at Agatha, who leapt behind the forest well just in time.
"Call that thing off,"
Tedros yelled as he deflected Grim's arrows into the well with his training sword.
"Grim! She's my friend!" Sophie shouted.
Grim guiltily put his arrows away. On day four, he spent all of Sophie's classes grinding his teeth in the corner and clawing at the walls. Lady Lesso gave him a curious stare.
"You know, by looking at him, you'd think..."
She gazed at Sophie, then brushed the thought away.
"Never mind. Just give him a little milk and he'll be more amenable."
The milk worked on day five. On day six, Grim started shooting at Agatha again. Sophie tried everything she could to pacify him. She sang lullabies, gave him Dot's best fudge, even let him have her bed while she took the floor. But this time, nothing would stop him.
"What do I do?"
Sophie cried to Lady Lesso after class.
"Some henchmen go rogue," Lady Lesso sighed. "It's a hazard of villainy. But usually it's because..."
"Because what?"
"Oh, I'm sure he'll calm down. They always do."
But by day seven, Grim started flying after Agatha during lunch, evading the grasps of students and wolves until Hester's demon finally subdued him. Agatha glared at Sophie from behind a tree.
"Maybe you remind him of someone,"
Sophie whimpered. But even Hester's demon couldn't control Grim for long, and the next day his arrows came tipped with fire. After one of these singed her ear, Agatha finally had enough. Remembering Yuba's last lesson, she lured the rogue Cupid into the blue forest during lunch and hid in the deep stone well. When Grim giddily dove down the dark shaft to find her, she clubbed him with her clump and knocked him out cold.
"I thought he'd kill you,"
Sophie wept after they sealed the well with a boulder. "I can take care of myself," Agatha said. "Look, the ball is less than 2 months away and things with Tedros are getting worse. We have to try a new..."
"He's my prince,"
Sophie stiffened,
"and I'll handle him myself."
Agatha didn't bother arguing. When Sophie was ready, she'd listen. While both schools went off with Castor and Uma to free their henchmen back to the Blue Forest, Sophie stole away to the Library of Vice. It took all of her will not to run out the moment she came in. Perched atop Vice's top floor, the Library of Vice was like a normal library, only after a flood, fire, and tornado had swept through. Its rusty iron bookshelves were skewed at odd angles, with thousands of fallen books all over the floor. The walls were furry green with mold, the brown carpet was moist and sticky, and the room smelled like a mix of smoke and sour milk. Behind a desk in the corner was a gelatinous toad puffing a cigar and stamping books one after one before tossing them on the floor.
"Subject of interest," he burped.
"Love spells," Sophie said, trying not to breathe. The toad nodded to a dank shelf in the corner. There were only three books left on it. Thorns Not Roses, Why Love is a Curse, by Baron Drackle. A Never's Guide to Ending True Love, by Dr. Walter Bartoli. Foolproof Love Spells and Potions, by Glinda Gooch. Sophie threw open the third, ran down its list of spells until she found Spell 53, the True Love Heart Hex. She ripped out the page and fled before she fainted from the stench. Dot, Hester, and Anadil hunched over it during lunch.
"Once a boy is under this spell, he will instantly fall in love with you and do whatever you ask,"
Anadil read.
"Works particularly well with eliciting proposals of marriage and invitations to balls."
"All you have to do is mix the prescribed potion into a bullet and shoot it at your true love's heart," Sophie read excitedly.
"It won't work," Hester crabbed.
"You're just mad because I found it."
Hester snatched a heap of letters from her bag.
"Dear Hester, I don't know of any love spells that work. Dear Hester, love spells are notoriously dodgy. Dear Hester, love spells are dangerous. Use a bad spell, and you can warp someone permanently."
"It's foolproof," Dot said.
"Says who? Glinda Gooch."
"I say it's worth a try if it means we don't have to talk about balls and kisses anymore,"
Anadil said, red eyes studying the recipe.
"Bat heart, lodestones, cat bone, these are all standard ingredients. Oh, we need a drop of Tedros's scent."
"How are we going to get that?" Dot said. "If a never even gets near an ever, the wolves are on us. We need an ever to do it." Agatha plopped down in a heap of pink. "What did I miss?" Sophie only got five words out.
"No. No spells, no hexes, no tricks," Agatha scolded. "It has to be true love."
"But look!"
Sophie held up the page, and its painting of a prince and princess kissing at a ball. The caption, "Only authentic substitute for true love." Agatha crumpled the page and dumped it in Sophie's pail. "I don't want to hear about it again." Sophie spent the rest of lunch picking at her loaf of cheese. 2 days later, Hester felt a jab in the middle of the night. She stirred to see Sophie standing over her bed, sniffing a blue tie with a gold tea.
"Smells like heaven. I'm sure there's enough here."
For a moment, Hester looked confused. Then her cheeks swelled, ready to detonate.
"What about a villain's choir?" Sophie said. "I think that'll be my second proposal as captain."
Hester stayed up all night mixing the ingredients. Using her mother's old crockery, she blended them into a frothy pink potion, distilled the love potion into shimmering gas, and poured the gas into a heart-shaped bullet over the fireplace.
"Just hope he doesn't die," Hester growled, handing it over.
Sophie practiced her aim for 2 days before she knew she was ready. She waited until Surviving Fairy Tales, when Yuba and the group were climbing trees to study forest flora. When Tedros reached for a blue hornbeam branch, she saw her chance and drew the bullet into her slingshot.
"You're mine," Sophie whispered.
The pink heart shot off the sling and flew straight for the silver swan on Tedros's heart, only to turn crimson, ricochet off him like rubber, and smash back into her with a violent alien scream. The whole group spun in shock. Sophie's black robes were splashed with a giant, bloody letter F.
"For failing to abide by the rules," Yuba glowered from a tree. "No spells until after the unlocking."
Beatrix picked the broken heart bullet off the ground.
"A love spell? You tried a love spell on Tedros?"
The class burst into howls. Sophie turned to Tedros, who couldn't have looked more enraged. Next to him, Agatha had the same expression. Sophie covered her face and fled, sobs echoing through the forest.
"Every year, a rascal tries something. But even the sorriest rascal knows there's no shortcuts to love," Yuba said. "We'll start with proper spells next week, I assure you. But for now, on to ferns. How can we tell if a fern is actually a never in disguise?"
Agatha didn't follow the group to the fern field. Slouched against an oak, she gazed at the heart-shaped pieces in the grass, just as shattered as her dreams of home. Hester came back from supper to find Sophie sprawled on her bed, a puddle of tears. Sophie looked up, the red F on her robes even brighter now.
"It won't come off. I've tried everything."
Hester dumped her school bag on the floor.
"We're practicing our talents in the common room. Feel free to join."
She opened the door and paused.
"I warned you."
Sophie jumped at the slam. All night she couldn't sleep, dreading the thought of wearing the F to lunch the next day. Finally, she managed to doze off and woke to find the sun up and all her roommates gone to breakfast. Agatha was sitting on the edge of her bed, picking dead leaves out of her pink dress. "A wolf saw me this time, but I lost him in the tunnel." She glanced up at a gilded mirror on the wall. "Looks nice in here."
"Thank you for bringing it,"
Sophie rasped. "My room's happier without it." Tense silence.
"I'm sorry, Agatha."
"Sophie, I'm on your side. We have to work together if we want to get out of here alive."
"The spell was our only hope,"
Sophie said softly. "Sophie, we can't give up. We have to get home." Sophie stared into the mirror, eyes welling.
"What happened to me, Agatha?"
"You want the ball without winning your prince. You want your kiss without doing the work. Look, I had to clean plates after supper all week, so I read while doing it." Agatha pulled a book from her dress, Winning Your Prince by Emma Anemone, and started flipping to dog-eared pages. "According to this, winning true love is the ultimate challenge. In every fairy tale, it might seem like love at first sight, but there's always skill behind it."
"But I already..."
"Shut up and listen. It comes down to three things. Three things a girl has to do to win her fairy tale prince. First, you need to flaunt your strengths. Second, you need to speak through actions, not words. And third, you need to parade competing suitors. If you just do these three things and do them well, we stand a..." Sophie raised her hand. "What?"
"I can't flaunt anything in this potato sack. Can't act with that she-devil in my face and have no competing suitors except a boy who looks and smells like a rat. Look at me, Agatha. I have an F on my chest. My hair looks like a boy's. I have bags under my eyes. My lips are dry. And yesterday, I found a blackhead on my nose."
"And how are you going to change that?" Agatha snapped. Sophie bowed her head. The ugly letter cast shadows on her hands.
"Tell me what to do, Aggie. I'm listening."
"Show him who you are," Agatha said, softening. She gazed deep into her friend's eyes. Show him the real Sophie. Sophie saw the faith burning bright in Agatha's smile. Then, turning to the mirror, she managed a sly smile of her own. A smile that matched one of a grim little Cupid, trapped deep in darkness, waiting patiently to be let out. Chapter 17. The Empress's New Clothes. News of Sophie's failed love spell swept across both schools, and by mid-morning, everyone waited with bated breath to get a glimpse of her scarlet F. But when Sophie skipped all her morning classes, it was clear she was too ashamed to show her face.
You should have heard the things Tedros called her, Beatrix said to Evergirls at lunch.
Sitting in a heap of autumn leaves, Agatha tuned her out and looked over at Tedros and the Ever boys playing rugby, silver swans glimmering on blue-knit sweaters. Across the clearing, Nevers shunned group activities and sat mostly by themselves. Hester glanced up from spells for suffering and read Agatha's eyes with a shrug, as if Sophie's whereabouts were the least of her concerns.
Now, Teddykins, it's not her fault, Beatrix blathered loudly. The poor girl thinks she's one of us. We should feel sorry for someone so pathetic.
Her eyes bulged. Agatha saw why. Sophie sashayed into the clearing, dumpy black sack refashioned into a strapless bodice dress, F shimmering over her chest with devil-red sequins. She'd cut her blonde hair even shorter and slicked it down in a shiny bob. Her face was painted geisha white, her eyelids pink, her lips vermilion, and her glass shoes had not only been repaired, but heeled even taller, which, together with the extremely short dress, showed off long, creamy legs. From the shadows, she swanned into the sun, and light exploded off her glitter-dusted skin, bathing her in heavenly glow. Sophie strutted past Hester, who dropped her book, past Everboys, who dropped their ball, and glided right up to Hort.
"Let's do lunch," she said, sweeping him away like a hostage.
Across the field, Tedros's sword fell out of its sheath. He saw Beatrix glaring and put it back. During Surviving Fairy Tales, Sophie ignored Yuba's lecture on leaving useful trails and spent the entire class cozying up to Hort and filling her never-pail with roots and herbs from the Blue Forest.
"What are you doing?" hissed Agatha.
"Can you believe it, Aggie darling? They have beetroot, willow bark, lemonwood, and everything else I need to make my old potions and creams. Soon I'll be back to my real self."
This wasn't the real Sophie I had in mind.
"Excuse me? I'm just following your rules. Flaunt my assets, which are many, as you can see. Speak through actions. Have I said a word to Tedros? No, haven't. And, lest we forget, parade competing suitors. Do you know what it takes to survive lunch with Hort? To nuzzle that rodent every time I see Tedros looking? Eucalyptus, Agatha! I numb my nose with eucalyptus. But in the end, you were right. Listen, you miss a—"
"I was?"
"You reminded me what's important."
Sophie nodded to Tedros and Everboys, ogling her across the thicket.
"It doesn't matter if you're a never, ever, or whatever. In the end, the fairest of them all wins."
She glossed her lips and gave them a smack.
"You'll see. You'll ask me to the ball before the week's up, and you'll get your precious kiss. So, no more negativity, darling. It gives me a headache. Now, where's that worthless Hort? I told him to stay by me at all times."
She swept away, leaving Agatha speechless. In the school for evil, Nevers sulked through supper, knowing they had a full night of studying ahead. With spellcasting set to begin, the teacher's tests were based less on talent now and more in tedious recall. For the next day alone, they had to memorize 80 murder schemes for Lady Lesso's first challenge, giant commands for henchmen, and the flower ground map for Seda's geography exam.
"How will he correct them?" Hester groused. "He can't even see."
At curfew, Hester, Dot, and Anadil trudged back from the common room, piled high with books, only to find their room turned into a laboratory. Dozens of brilliant coloured potions bubbled over open flames, vials of creams, soaps, and dyes littered the shelves. A mess of dried leaves, herbs, flowers blanketed the three beds. And in the centre of it all sat Sophie, buried under sequins, ribbons and fabric, testing new concoctions on patches of skin.
"My God, she is a witch," Anadil gasped.
Sophie held up the recipe book for good looks. "I stole it from an Ever at lunch." "Shouldn't you be studying for challenges?" Dot asked.
"Beauty is a full-time job," sighed Sophie,
lathering herself in a bright green balm.
"And you wonder why Evers are slow," Hester said.
"Sophie is back, darlings, and she's just getting started," Sophie mooned. "Love is my challenge now."
And indeed, though Sophie placed near the bottom in all three challenges the next day, she placed first in attention. Arriving to lunch with her black uniform remolded into a dazzling slit-back toga dress sashed with blue orchids. Her heels were a full inch taller, her face shimmering bronze, her eyeshadow provocative periwinkle, her lips delicious crimson, and the glittering F on the front of her dress was now complemented by sequins on the back that read, "Is for fabulous."
"That can't be allowed,"
Beatrix whined to drooling boys. But she was wearing her uniform, Sophie insisted to teachers, while usually fierce wolves looked just as awed as the boys. Dot swore one even winked at Sophie when it filled her lunch pail.
"She's making a mockery of villainy,"
Hester fumed, black eyes flaying Sophie across the clearing.
"They should lock her in the doom room permanently."
"Beast's still missing,"
Anadil yawned.
"Whatever spooked him must have been pretty bad."
The next day, Sophie flunked all her challenges again and yet somehow avoided failing out of school. Though she was clearly the worst, each time she saw a 19 pop up instead of a 20.
"I'm just too lovable to fail,"
she preened to mystified classmates. During forest groups, Sophie ignored Yuba's lecture on scarecrow survival and scribbled busily in her notebook, while Agatha glowered at her black baby doll dress, pink lollipop, and sequin spelling F is for fun.
"Name something else that starts with F,"
Sophie whispered. "I'm trying to listen, and so should you, since we'll be here forever."
"F is for forever. A bit heady. How about flirty? Or fetching?
Or futile? He hasn't even talked to you yet."
"F is for faith," Sophie said, "which I thought you had in me."
Agatha grumbled to herself, the rest of class. But Sophie almost made her a believer when she arrived the next day in a belly-bearing black halter, poofed miniskirt, spiky pixie hairdo, and heels dyed hot pink. The Everboy spent lunch goggling at her between slobbery bites of beef, and yet, even though Sophie could see Tedros sneak peeks at her legs, grit his teeth each time she passed, and sweat when she got too close, he still didn't talk to her. "It's not enough," Agatha said, accosting her after Yuba's class. "You need better assets." Sophie looked down at herself.
"I think my assets are quite sufficient."
"Deeper assets, you idiot. Something inside, like compassion or charity or kindness." Sophie blinked.
"Sometimes you make wonderful sense, Aggie. He needs to see how good I truly am."
"She sees reason,"
Agatha exhaled. Now hurry. If he asks someone else to the ball, we'll never get home. Agatha proposed that Sophie sneak Tedros love limericks filled with clever rhymes, or leave him secret presents that revealed depth and thought, tried and true strategies both outlined in Winning Your Prince. Sophie listened, nodding to all of this, so when Agatha arrived at lunch the next day, she expected to read a first draft of a verse or inspect a handmade gift. Instead, she arrived to find a group of 20 Nevergirls, crowded in a corner of the clearing. "What's going on over there?" Agatha asked Hester and Anadil, both studying in tree shade.
"She said it was your idea," Hester sneered, eyes on her book.
"Bad idea," Anadil said. "So bad we don't want to talk to you."
Confused, Agatha turned to the gathering. A familiar voice rang from its center.
"Fabulous, darlings, but just a little less cream."
Agatha's chest tightened. She forced her way through the swarm of nevers until she stumbled into the center and almost died from shock. Sophie sat on a tree stump, a painted wooden sign hanging from a branch above her. Lunchtime with Sophie, where beauty meets charity. Today's topic, beetroot for blemish banishment. All around her, never girls were squeezing sticky red beetroot cream onto their pimples and warts.
"Now remember, girls, just because you're ugly doesn't mean you can't be presentable," Sophie preached.
"I'm bringing my roommates tomorrow," Arachne whispered to green-skinned Mona.
Agatha gaped, flabbergasted. Then she saw someone sneaking away.
"Dot?"
Dot turned meekly, smothered in red cream.
"Oh, hello. I was just, you know, I thought I should check up on, you know, to see if, in case..."
She looked at her feet. "Don't tell Hester." Agatha had no idea what any of this had to do with winning Tedros' love, but when she tried to corner Sophie after, three Nevergirls shoved in front of her to ask Sophie about picking the best beets. Agatha didn't get a chance in forest groups either, because Yuba separated the Evers and Nevers.
"You must get used to seeing each other as the enemy. The first trial by tail is in 3 weeks," the gnome said. "Now, for the trial, you'll need a few basic spells. There's no one way to do magic, of course. Some spells require visualization, some incantations, others hand flicks, foot taps, magic wands, numeric codes, or even partners. Yet there is one rule common to all spells."
From his pocket, he pulled a shiny silver key, the bit shaped like a swan.
"Evers, right hands, please."
Baffled Evers looked at each other and held out their hands.
"You first."
Agatha frowned as he grabbed her hand, then her second finger.
"Wait, what are you going to..."
Yuba magically plunged his swan key into Agatha's fingertip. The skin went see-through, and the swan sank past tissue, veins, blood, and attached to her bone. The gnome turned the bow, and her bone painlessly rotated a full circle. Her fingertip glowed bright orange for just a moment, then dulled as Yuba withdrew the key. Bewildered, Agatha stared at her finger as Yuba unlocked the rest of the Evers, then the Nevers, including Sophie, who barely glanced up from scribbling in her notebook.
"Magic follows feeling. That is our only rule," said the gnome when he was finished. "When your finger glows, it means you have summoned enough emotion, enough purpose, to perform a spell. You can only do magic when you have deep need and want."
Students squinted at their fingers, feeling, coaxing with all their might, and soon fingertips started to flicker. Each person's a unique color.
"But, like a magic wand, finger glow is just a training wheel," Yuba warned. In the woods, you will look like a nincompoop if you light up every time you cast a spell. We will relock your glow once you show control.
He grimaced at Hort, uselessly thrusting his finger at rocks, trying to make something happen.
If ever.
The gnome turned back to the group.
In the first year, you'll learn only three types of spells. Water control, weather manipulation, and mogrification, both plant and animal. Today we'll begin with the last,
he said to excited twitters.
A simple visualization spell, but highly effective for escaping enemies. Now, since your clothes won't fit after you mogrify, it's easier if you're not wearing any.
The students stopped tittering.
But I suppose we'll do,
Yuba said.
Who wants to go first?
Everyone raised their hand, except two. Agatha, who was praying now more than ever that Sophie had a plan to get home, and Sophie, who was too busy writing her next lecture, Bath is not a four-letter word, to care about any of this. By the third day on her stump, Sophie had 30 freshly bathed Nevergirls attend Just Say No to Drab.
Now, Professor Manley says a never must be ugly, that ugly means uniqueness, power, freedom. So here's my question to Professor Manley. How do you expect us to feel unique, empowered, or free in this?
She roared, waving the dumpy black robes like an enemy flag. The cheer was so loud that across the clearing, Beatrix's pen slipped and ruined her ball gown sketch. It's that mentally ill Sophie, she snapped. Still looking for a ball date, is she? Murmured Tedros, aiming his next horseshoe throw.
Worse. Now she's trying to convince the Nevers they're not losers.
Tedros missed his shot in surprise. Agatha didn't even try to see Sophie after lunch, with Never Girls mobbing her for style advice. She didn't try the next day either, when an impromptu shoe burning erupted after Sophie's lecture on Abandon All Ye Clumps, and wolves ran around whipping students back to the tower. And she certainly didn't try the next, when every Never Girl showed up for Sophie's talk on Fitness for the Unfit, except Hester and Anadil, who cornered Agatha after lunch.
This idea keeps getting more rotten,
Anadil said.
So rotten, we're not your friends anymore. Boys, balls, kisses, all your problem now,
Hester snarled, demon twitching on her neck.
As long as it doesn't mess with me winning captain, I could give a hog's behind what you two do. Got it.
The next day, Agatha hid in the tunnel of trees, waited for the sound of high heels on dead leaves, and tackled Sophie in a flying leap.
What is it today? Cuticle creams? Teeth whiteners? More abdominal exercises? If you want to talk to me, you can wait in line with everyone else, Sophie yelled. Malevolent makeovers, black is the new black, yoga for villains, do you want to die here? You said show him something deeper. Isn't this compassion? Isn't this kindness and wisdom? I'm helping those who can't help themselves.
Excuse me, Saint Teresa, but the goal here is Tedros. How is this accomplishing anything?
Accomplishment. Such a vague word. But I'd consider that an accomplishment, wouldn't you?
Agatha followed Sophie's look out the tunnel. The crowd in front of her stump was 100 Nevers deep. Only there was one hovering in back, who didn't look like the rest. A golden-haired boy in a blue rugby sweater. Agatha released Sophie in shock.
You should come, Sophie called as she flounced out of the tunnel. Today's about dry, damaged hair.
In front of the stump, Arachne's one eye glowered at Tedros.
Why is Prince Prettyface here?
Yeah, back to your side, Everboy, Mona sniped, pelting him with tree mold.
More Nevergirls started to heckle him, and Tedros shrank back, anxiously. He wasn't used to being unpopular, but just as he was booed away,
we welcome everyone,
Sophie admonished as she swept to her stump. Tedros came back every day that week.
He told his mates he just wanted to see what Sophie was wearing, but there was more to it. With each new day, he watched her teach misshapen villains how to straighten their hunches, hold eye contact, and enunciate their words. He watched Neverboy skeptically skulk on the fringes at first, only to soon badger Sophie for advice on sleeping better, masking body odor, and managing their tempers. At first, the wolves yawned through these assemblies, but Tedros could see them listening, as more and more Nevers showed up for Sophie's lectures. Soon the villains began to debate her prescriptions at supper and over dreggy tea in common rooms. They started to sit together at lunch, defend each other in class, and stopped making jokes about their losing streak. For the first time in 200 years, evil had hope. All because of one girl. By the end of the week, Tedros had a seat in the front row.
"It's working! I can't believe it!" Agatha gushed as she walked Sophie to the tunnel of trees. "He might say he loves you. He might kiss you this week. We're going home. What's tomorrow's topic?"
"Eating your words," Sophie said, swishing ahead. At lunch the next day, Agatha stood in line for a basket of artichoke and olive tartines, dreaming about the hero's welcome she and Sophie would get when they returned home. Gavaldon would erect statues of them in the square, fate them in sermons, stage a musical about their lives, and teach schoolchildren about the two girls who saved them from the curse. Her mother would have 1,000 new patients, Reaper fresh trout every day, and she would have her pictures in the town scroll, and anyone who had ever dared to mock her would now grovel at her. "What a joke!" Agatha turned to Beatrix, who was watching Nevers throng around Sophie in a revealing black sari and sharp-heeled fur booties for her lecture on how to be the best at everything, like me.
"As if she's the best," Beatrix snorted.
"I think she's the best Never I've ever seen," a voice said behind her. Beatrix whirled to Tedros.
"Is she now, Teddy? And I think it's all a big fairy tale."
Tedros followed her eyes to the ranking boards, smoldering in soft sunlight on the blue forest gates. On the Nevers board, Sophie's name hung off the bottom, pecked to holes by robins. Number 120 out of 120.
"The Empress's new clothes, to be precise," Beatrix said, and strutted away.
Tedros didn't go to see Sophie that day. Word spread that he found it sad to watch Nevers pin their hopes on the worst girl in school. The next day, Sophie showed up to a deserted stump. The wooden sign had been defaced. Lunchtime with Sophie, where beauty meets stupidity.
"I told you to pay attention," Agatha shouted as they waited in pouring rain after Yuba's class for wolves to open the gates. "Between sewing new outfits, brewing new makeup, preparing new lectures, I can't worry about class," Sophie sobbed under a black parasol. "I have my fans to think about."
"Of which you now have none," Agatha yelled. She could see Hester smirking at her from the Group 6 huddle.
"3 bottom ranks and you fail, Sophie. I don't know how you've survived this long." "They don't let me fail, no matter how bad I am. Why do you think I stopped studying?"
Agatha tried to make sense of this, but couldn't focus with her fingertip burning. Ever since Yuba unlocked it, it glowed whenever she was angry, as if raring to do a spell.
"But how did you get all those high ranks before?"
she said, hiding her hand in her pocket.
"That was before they made us read. I mean, do I look like I care how to poison a comb, how to pluck toad eyes, or how to say, 'May I cross your bridge' in Troll? Here I am, trying to improve these villains, and you want me to memorize the recipe for children noodle soup? Agatha, did you know that to boil a child, you have to wrap them in parchment first? Otherwise they won't be properly cooked and might wake up in your pot. Is that what you want me to learn? How to hurt and kill? How to be a witch?"
"Listen, you need to win back respect.
through intentional evil? No, shan't.
Then we're doomed, Agatha snapped. Sophie exhaled angrily and turned away. Suddenly her expression changed.
What in the...
She gawked at the Evers ranking board, tacked to the gates. 1. Tedros of Camelot, 71 points. 2. Beatrix of Jaunt Joly, 84 points. 3. Rena of Pasha Dunes, 88 points. 4. Agatha of Woods Beyond, 96 points.
But... You're... You! Sophie cried.
And I do my homework, Agatha barked. I don't want to learn dove calls or practice fainting or sew handkerchiefs, but I'll do whatever it takes to get us home. But Sophie wasn't listening. A naughty grin spread across her face. Agatha crossed her arms. No way. First of all, teachers will catch us.
You'll love my curses homework. It's all about tricking princes, and you hate boys.
Second, your roommates will tell on you,
and you'll love my uglification homework. We're learning to scare children, and you hate children.
If Tedros finds out, we're dead.
And look at your finger. It glows when you're upset.
I can't do that. It's a fluke.
Look, it's even brighter now. You're born to be a vil...
Agatha stomped. We're not cheating. Sophie fell silent. Wolves unlocked the Blue Forest gates, and students surged into the tunnels. Neither Sophie nor Agatha moved.
My roommates say I'm 100% evil, Sophie said softly. But you know the truth. I don't know how to be evil. Not even 1%. So please don't ask me to go against my own soul, Agatha. I can't. Her voice caught. I just can't.
She left Agatha under the umbrella. As Sophie joined the herd, the storm rinsed the sheen out of her hair, the glitter off her skin, until Agatha couldn't tell her from the other villains. Guilt flushed through her, burning her finger bright as the sun. She hadn't told Sophie the truth. She had the same idea to do Sophie's evil work and squashed it. Not because she was afraid she'd get caught. She was afraid she might like it. All 100%. That night, Sophie had nightmares. Tedros kissing goblins, Agatha crawling from a well with cupid wings, Hester's demon chasing her through sewers until the beast rose out of dark water, bloody hands snatching, and Sophie lunged past him and locked herself in the doom room. Only there was a new torturer waiting. Her father in a wolf mask. Sophie jolted awake. Her roommates were fast asleep. She sighed, nestled into her pillow, and bolted back up. There was a cockroach on her nose. She started to scream, "It's me," the roach hissed. Sophie closed her eyes. "Wake up, wake up, wake up." She opened them. It was still there. "What's my favorite muffin?" she wheezed. "Flourless blueberry bran," the roach spat. "Any more stupid questions?" Sophie picked the bug off her nose. It had the same bulging eyes and sunken cheeks. "How in the world?" "Mogrification. We've been learning it for 2 weeks. Meet me in the common room." Agatha the cockroach glared back as she skittered for the door. "And bring your books." Chapter 18. The Roach and the Fox.
"Suppose mine glows green or brown or something," Sophie yawned, scratching her legs. Everything in the Malice common room was made of burlap, the floors, the furniture, the curtains, like some barbarous itch chamber. "I'm not doing it if it clashes with my clothes."
"Just focus on an emotion," barked the roach on her shoulder. "Like anger, Try anger. Sophie closed her eyes.
Is it glowing?
No. What are you thinking about?
The food here.
Real anger, you oaf. Magic comes from real feelings. Sophie's face scrunched with effort.
Deeper. Nothing's happening.
Sophie's face darkened and her fingertip flickered hot pink.
That's it! You're doing it!
Agatha hopped excitedly.
What are you thinking about?
How infuriating your voice is, Sophie said, opening her eyes.
Should I think about you every time?
For the next week, the Malice Common Room turned into a cockroach's night school. The Mogrify spell only lasted 3 hours, so Agatha worked Sophie like a slave, driving her to make her finger glow stronger, to fog a room and flood a floor, to tell a sleeping willow from a weeping willow, and to even say a few words of giant. Sophie's ranks immediately improved, but by the fourth day, the long nights had taken their toll.
My skin looks grey, Sophie croaked.
And you're still ranked 68, so pay attention, berated the roach on her book, Swancrest glistening on abdomen. The woods-wide plague began when Rumpelstiltskin stamped so hard the ground cracked.
What made you change your mind?
About helping me? And from the ground, a million poisonous bugs crawled out and infested the woods. Sickening scores of nevers and evers, Agatha said, ignoring her. They even had to close this school since the bugs were highly contagious. Sophie flopped back on the couch.
How do you know all this?
Because while you stare in mirrors, I read poisons and plagues. Sophie sighed.
So they closed the school for bugs. Then what
This is where you've been sneaking to.
Sophie swiveled to Hester at the door in black pajamas, flanked by Anadil and Dot.
Homework, Sophie yawned, holding up her book. Need light.
Since when do you care about homework?
Said Hester, looking greasier than ever.
Thought beauty was a full-time job, mimicked Anadil.
Rooming with you is such inspiration, Sophie said, smiling. Makes me want to be the best villain I can be.
Hester eyed her for a long moment. With a growl, she turned and led the others out. Sophie exhaled, blowing Agatha off the couch.
She's up to something, they heard Hester snarl.
Or she's changed, piped Dot, waddling behind. Roach on her book and she didn't even notice.
By the sixth night of schooling, Sophie had risen to number 55. But each new day, she looked more like a zombie, skin sickly white, eyes glassy and bruised. Instead of a fancy new frock or hat, now she loped around with dirty hair and a wrinkled dress, trailing study notes all over the tower like breadcrumbs.
Maybe you should get some sleep, Tedros mumbled to her during Yuba's lesson on insect cuisine.
Too busy trying not to be the worst girl in school, Sophie said as she took notes.
Insects are often available when mealworms are not,
Yuba said, holding up a live cockroach.
Look, you can't expect anyone to listen to you when you're ranked lower than Hort, Tedros whispered.
When I'm number one, you'll ask me to forgive you.
You get to number one, and I'll ask you anything you want, he snorted.
Sophie turned to him.
I'll hold you to that.
If you're still awake.
First, remove the inedible bits,
Yuba said, and tore off the roach's head. Agatha shuddered and hid behind a pine shrub the rest of the lesson. But that night, she almost jumped from her thorax when Sophie told her what happened with Tedros.
Ever boys always keep their promises, she said, bouncing on knobby roach legs. It's the prince code of chivalry. Now you just have to get to number one, and he'll ask you to the...
Sophie? Sophie answered with a snore. By the 10th day of Cockroach College, Sophie was only at number 40, and the circles under her eyes were so black she looked like a raccoon. By the next, she'd slipped back to number 65 when she napped during Lesso's test on Nemesis Dreams, fell asleep during Henchman, knocking Beazle off the belfry,
and lost her voice in special talents for another low rank.
"Your talent is progressing,"
Sheba said to Anadil, who managed to make her rats grow a full 5 inches bigger. Then she turned to Sophie.
"Here I thought you were our great witch, Hope."
By the end of the week, Sophie was the worst villain in school again.
"I'm sick," Agatha said, coughing into her hand.
Professor Dovey didn't look up from her parchment-strewn desk.
"Ginger tea and 2 slices of grapefruit. Repeat every 2 hours."
"I tried that," Agatha said, increasing the volume of her coughs.
"Now is not the time to miss class, Agatha,"
Professor Dovey said, stacking papers under sparkling pumpkin weights.
"Less than a month before the ball, and I want to make sure our 4th-ranked student is prepared for the most important night of her young life. Do you have an Everboy in mind?"
Agatha exploded in a paroxysm of hacks. Professor Dovey looked up, alarmed.
"Feels like
plague,"
Agatha wheezed. Professor Dovey went white. Quarantined in her room, Agatha the Roach now accompanied Sophie to all her classes. Tucked behind Sophie's ear, she whispered the first sign of a nemesis dream, answer, tasting blood, steered frost giant negotiations during henchmen, and told Sophie which scarecrows were good or evil in Yuba's forest challenge. On the second day, she helped Sophie lose a tooth in uglification, match monsters during Seda's exam, Lorkies, sweet talkers, harpies, child eaters, and determine which of Yuba's beanstalks was poisonous, which was edible, and which was Dot in disguise. There were hairy moments, of course. She almost ended up on the bottom of Hester's clump, barely survived a hovering bat, and nearly turned back into herself in special talents before finding a broom closet just in time. By the third day, Agatha hardly glanced at her good homework and spent all her free time learning evil spells. Where her classmates struggled to make fingers flicker, she could keep hers glowing by thinking about things that made her angry. School, mirrors, boys. Then it was just a matter of following a spell's precise recipe, and just like that, she could do magic. Simple stuff, nothing more than playing with water and weather, but still, real magic. She would have been paralyzed by the incredibility, the impossibility, except that it came so naturally. Where the others couldn't summon a drizzle, Agatha conjured thunderclouds in her room and splashed the odious murals off her wall with a squall of lightning and rain. Between sessions, she stole into bathrooms to try out new spells for suffering, the lights out jinx to briefly darken the sky, the sea swell curse to summon a giant wave. Time evaporated when she studied evil, so rife with power and possibility, she could never get bored. While waiting for Pollux to deliver her good homework one night, Agatha whistled while she doodled.
"What, pray tell, is that?"
She turned to Pollux in her doorway, head on a hare's body, staring at the drawing.
"Oh, me at my wedding. See, there's my prince."
She crumpled the page and coughed.
"Any homework?"
After chastising her for slipping in the ever ranks, explaining every assignment thrice, and berating her to cover her mouth when she coughed, Pollux finally left in a circus of hops and falls. Agatha exhaled. Then her eye caught the crumpled doodle of herself flying through flames, and she saw what she'd been drawing.
"Nevermore. Evil paradise."
"We have to get home," she mumbled. By the end of the week, Agatha had led Sophie on a magnificent winning streak in all her classes, including Yuba's trial tune-ups. In these one-on-one duels to prepare for the upcoming trial by tale, Sophie beat every person in her group using approved spells, whether stunning Ruven with a lightning bolt, icing Beatrix's lips before she could call for animal help, or liquefying Tedros's training sword.
"Someone's been doing their homework," Tedros said, agog.
Hidden under Sophie's collar, Agatha blushed with pride.
"Before it was dumb luck. This is different,"
Hester griped to Anadil, as they bit into a lunch of charred cow tongues.
How is she doing it?
Good old-fashioned hard work, Sophie said, swishing by in shimmering makeup, ruby red hair, and a black kimono, sparkling with gems that spelled F is for focused. Hester and Anadil choked on their tongues. By the end of the third week, Sophie was up to number 5, and her lunchtime lectures had resumed due to popular demand. So had her black-robed fashions, bolder and more extravagant than before, in a grand pageant of scalloped plumage, fishnet bodices, faux monkey fur, sequined burkas, leather pantsuits, powdered wigs, and even a chainmail bustier.
She's cheating, Beatrix hissed to anyone who would listen. Some rogue fairy godmother or time-turning spell. No one has time to do all this.
But Sophie had time to design a satin jumper with matching nun's wimple, a sparkled clamshell dress, and matching shoes for every new look. She had time to beat Hester in the Uglifier Ballroom Challenge, write a report on Wolves versus Man-Wolves, and prepare lunchtime lectures on Wicked Success, Ugly as the New Beautiful, Building Your Body for Sin. She had time to be One Girl Fashion Show, rabble-rouser, rebel priestess, and still wrestle her way past Anadil to number 2 in the rankings. This time, Beatrix couldn't stop Tedros from falling for Sophie, but Tedros tried valiantly to stop himself.
She's a never. So what if she's beautiful, or smart, or creative and kind and generous and...
Tedros took a deep breath.
Evers can't like nevers. You're just confused.
He felt relieved when Yuba hosted another good or evil challenge. This time, the gnome turned all the girls into blue pumpkins and hid them in the forest's voluminous patch.
Just find an ever, Tedros scolded himself. Find an ever and forget all about her.
This one's good,
Hort yelled and flicked a blue shell. Nothing happened. The other boys couldn't tell the difference between pumpkins either, and started debating the merits of each.
This is not a group assignment,
Yuba bellowed. Clinging to Sophie's blue vine, Agatha's roach watched as the boys split up. Tedros headed west towards the turquoise thicket and stopped. Slowly he turned to Sophie's pumpkin.
He's coming, Agatha said.
How do you know? Sophie whispered.
Because that's the way he looked at me.
Tedros walked up to a pumpkin.
This one. This one's an ever.
Yuba frowned.
Look closely first.
Tedros ignored him, clasped its blue skin, and in a burst of glitter dust, the pumpkin turned into Sophie. A 16 puffed in slimy green smoke over the prince's head, and a 1 in black over Sophie's.
Only the best evil can disguise as good,
Yuba commended, with a wave of his staff, and erased the F off Sophie's dress once and for all.
And as for you, son of Arthur, I suggest you study your rules. Let's hope you don't make such a terrible mistake when it counts.
Tedros tried to look ashamed.
We can't find any, a voice called.
Yuba turned to see all the boys with low ranks smoking over their heads.
Should have marked them,
he sighed, and waddled into the patch, jabbing pumpkins to see if they yelped. With the gnome gone, Tedros let himself smile. How could he tell a teacher he didn't care about rules? Rules that had led him to that god-awful Agatha twice.